Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock markets commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small cap. So again, a big welcome, Paul, from your last week in Gozo.
Yes, well, actually, I'm in Sleema in Malta now, but yeah, back in the UK tomorrow. So hello to you and hello to everyone at home. Great to be here.
Yeah, well, you're definitely coming back into a busy time. We've had a bit of a deluge of corporate results and trading updates and all this sort of stuff over the past week, not least topped off by the UK Competition Commission releasing its preliminary findings on the vet practice adjudication, on what that means. And we've got the first question actually from Ben Sharman, and we've had a number of others pre-one, just asking about what that means for Pets at Home and also CVS Group, because both shares, one of them is a pure play vet practice and obviously Pets is a retailer as well. Both shares popped nicely today.
They did. I thought, well, I haven't got time to read this before 8 a.m. because we were busy on other things. So I thought I'll just wait to see what the share prices do. And they shot out of the starting gate positively. So the market, yeah, I mean, from what I can gather, it seems to effectively be what the market was expecting. So no new bad news. Things like they've got to publish detailed price list and things like that. Well, this was all known about, wasn't it? And CVS, I think, have put out an announcement straight away talking about their response to it. So from what I can gather, and I haven't looked in detail, it doesn't seem to contain any nasties unless there's anything I've missed. And this is only a provisional decision, isn't it, from the CMA? Yeah. So what's your take, Paul?
Yeah, mine was the same as yours. I mean, basically, they were just like saying, yes, we want a bit of transparency. We want to give people choices, better information. But there was nothing at all in terms of unbundling the big five vet practices. And so you allowed those to go all intact. But what it didn't also say, actually, it didn't say how it was going to treat additional acquisitions by those groups. And my instinct is saying further acquisitions by those are going to have a lot of scrutiny. So what that means for CVS Group, in, you know, I know that slightly better, which is the pure play vet practice. They've got a big business in Australia, which they're going to carry on growing. And I think they'll just basically keep the UK just as it where it is, and they'll just run it for as like a cash engine, a cash machine. And, basically, once the dust clears in 2, 3, 4 years, they may then look at that more strategically in terms of doing further M&A. But I think what it means is there's going to be no major disruption to Pets at Home or to CVS Group in the UK, which is great news, big tick in the box, hence a relief rally. But what it also probably means is that it's going to be difficult for anybody to add additional sites if you're already large, because I'm sure the CMA won't allow that. But I could be wrong.
Yeah. Well, I think if that would actually be a very happy outcome for consumers, I think, to deter if the CMA has actually acted as a deterrent to these corporates hoovering up the market, then I think they've done us a great favour. And actually, looking at the candlestick chart today, I see CVS spiked up to, unless it was a kind of rogue trade, spiked up to about £16.50 in early doors, and is now down to £14.20. So it's up 1% today. So, and Pets at Home, let's see if that did a similar thing. That's up 3% today. That's recovering nicely from the profit warning. I'm glad I sat tight on that. That's actually recovered nearly all of the most recent profit warning, I should say, because there's been several. It's pretty much back to where it was. So I'm happier that I sat tight with Pets at Home. I think it's a fundamentally good company. So just needs a new CEO to revitalize the retail side, but the vet side is doing fine. So yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually don't think there is predatory pricing in most of these big companies, simply because you look at CVS Group and its return on capital employed is only about 10, 12%. Profit margins, less than 10%.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about somebody like, you know, Microsoft or Nvidia doing 70% operating margins. I mean, these are like, you know, low double digits at most.
I think that's a fair point, actually. I suppose what it is, though, is the contrast. Because back in the day, you know, when we were kids or whatever, the vets were all just local practices when you were charged, you know, £3 or something, weren't you? I think it's the contrast, the way it's corporatized the sector. And it has some procedures are very expensive now. But obviously we value vets and it's marvelous what they do. So I don't want to say anything negative about the vets themselves. Yeah.
Have you been watching too many episodes of All Creatures Great and Small on Netflix? Are you box setting it or something?
Well, say my local vet in Canterbury, that's a Medivet, which I think
just
25 quid for half an hour. So, you know, that was pretty good.
Okay, we've got a quick broader question actually from Paul the Parrot. He's asking just, have you seen any sort of like small cap stocks sort of drifting down for no reason or anything like that? Anything to talk about? I mean, I personally don't, because some of them have gone up as well. But what's your feeling? Is it a bear market or a bull market or just a normal market?
It's a totally confused bipolar market. I mean, I can't work out what the hell's going on. You've got some stocks that are soaring to new highs on PE of 80, like Active Ops today. Anything with strong growth, the market's going crazy for. But you've got a lot of other things that just drift and drift and drift. I cannot work out I don't think there's any pattern to it. I think it's just people who need liquidity selling things because they need liquidity. Maybe people's were worried about the budget and taking pension lump sums. I've heard so it's a very strange market. But these are the markets where you get unusual opportunities as well as stress.
Yeah. Well, he mentioned Active Ops. We've got Jonathan asking about it. It basically does sort of like workforce management, back office management on a hybrid basis. So it allows big financial sector companies and health insurers to operate a large team both in the office and outside and maximize the efficiency. And they've been layering AI. Anyway, they came out with a half-year trading update today, and the share they were showing 20% plus ARR growth, really, really strong. Because having on the back of, they also did that was like for like, and they also did an acquisition, which means that the growth was even higher on the top. What was your take on it? Obviously, they're up to over 25% at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like an overreaction today, but and you know, I'm not the right person to ask because software businesses are just valued on ways that you know, are not rational to me personally. But you know, the ARR growth is stunning. I think it was near 30 or 35% actually.
Yeah.
At Active Ops. A very, very impressive update, no doubt about that. And we won't quibble over it. But markets at the moment seem to be overreacting to good news and overreacting to bad news. We can't help. We can't make the valuation stack up personally, but we're more value investors. So that very, very good update. No doubt about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm a value investor and a GARP investor. We're not that dissimilar.
Yeah, me too.
We just fish in the same ponds. This is actually my second largest position. I've owned it for about 4 years. And when you look at it on a valuation perspective, what's key is look for software companies is look at the gross margin, because that gives you a true perspective of the quality of this business. And it's roughly 85-90%. And then you look at the percentage of ARR compared to total sales. Now, they bought this other business, so it's gone down a bit, but it's still well over three quarters, over 75% is straight SaaS revenues. So what you're trying to do is to feed the hopper at the top of it. You get enormous operating leverage, and the more you do. Now, they're going through an inflection point because their growth has been so strong and they've been investing in AI technology. their operating margins at the moment, because that's why the PE looks optically high, are only 5%. Okay. That should be over 20% and will be in the fullness of time when you've got 85% gross margins. Okay. And so the better way of looking at it for valuation perspective in a software company, particularly on a GARP perspective, is to look at a sales multiple. And the reason is because then that gives you a better indication of what a private buyer would do to, would put down to buy it. Okay. And this one trades even after today's spike at £2.16 is about three and a half times current year sales. And for a SaaS business growing at over 25% top line and with AI behind it, driving it, then it actually is not expensive at 3.5 times. And that's why, you know, if you look at it from a value perspective, it's not actually that expensive. But if you look at it on a PE, if you focus on PE.
Oh, you can't use PE. No,
you're wrong to do it, in my view.
No, PE is irrelevant for these type of growth companies. The only thing I accept all of that, and that's all very sensible. But the only thing I would say, I don't think the gross margins in reality are that high. Because I was talking to CEO of a tech company who said, you know, there's a ton of costs in admin costs, which do go up when you have new clients added on. Do you know what I mean? So I think, you know, making assumption that it's automatically going to go from making nothing to making 20% margin is a pretty heroic assumption. But I take on board everything you say, Paul.
Yeah, the way you square that circle, okay, is when somebody who's in AI who wants to buy the company takes an 85% gross margin on its existing scaled infrastructure and lifts and shifts it. That's when you do get it.
Yes, true. And they can strip out a load of duplicated costs. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, the other thing I'd like to focus on this one is looking at who the clients are, who these client wins are, and what value they see in the software. Because obviously, if this software is really delivering big productivity gains for the clients, then the sky's the limit, isn't it?
Yeah. But the company just bought Enlighten. Now makes them the world leader in this back office software, AI software in its areas, and it's got 20% now of sales in the US, which gives them a real beachhead in to go out there. But anyway, who knows? You can get excited, but I would personally look at it and say, actually, I could see this at 5x sales easily if it continues 20% plus on ARR, because if you look at Interseed, it's on about 4.5x sales. So 3.5x sales is more, but it's not overly stretched. Anyway.
Yeah, interesting. No, I think it definitely does look interesting.
Okay, let's move to another software. We've got Colin. He's asking about One Spatial, which is a geospatial location business. It does its One Streetworks business software, and it also does an emergency sort of like services software out into the States. Helps large utilities manage their particular assets in the ground and does optical twins of it. What your view of this one? It's sort of like the share price has lost a bit of juice of late.
Yeah, it has, hasn't it? I'm just trying to find my notes on it. Yeah, they reported this Monday, didn't they? The 13th. Mm. Yeah, 2 days ago. It dropped a little bit on the H1 results. ARR was up 11%, so that's not too bad. A small loss before tax, but as you've already described, the exact P&L figure doesn't really matter for these growth software companies, does it? In line with expectations for the full year, good visibility, looks all right. I think management kind of over-egged it a bit in presentations they were giving about a year ago, and it's fallen a bit flat, hasn't it? But 61 million market cap isn't particularly demanding, is it? Balance sheet's kind of small but okay. We think it's potentially interesting, but again, not really my area. So you I'm sure will have looked at it, Paul. So what do you think?
I like the business. The only thing which sort of has held me, there's two things which has held me back. One, liquidity is not great if you want to put a chunk of change into it. I've always struggled on that one. However, the big sort of thing I've been scratching my head, and I'd like a bit of, if anybody's got any ideas, please put them into the chat box. It's basically the gross margins for a software company only makes 50% gross margins compared to 80% plus. And the reason is, I suspect, is because a large part of the business is services. So it's project management, it's delivering sort of implementations rather than selling straight software to get that mix down. And I think also what it does in its Australian division, I think it resells some other people's software as well.
Okay.
So I would like to see a split, if it was ever possible, if everybody's only got it, of what percentage of their revenue is their own software, like OneStreet's work in this emergency and the digital twin stuff, and what is implementations and services, and then also what is resale software, because I could value it a different way, because I get the blended EV to sales is 1.6. Now, I could see the software business on 3x sales if it was a pure software business, but it isn't. It's basically got all these other elements to it. So I need that granularity before I can really sort of nail the flag to the mast on this one.
Yeah, and I wonder also if some of it might be buying in data streams, because it pulls together a lot of data, doesn't it, on where the pipes and cables are and things. Does it have to buy that data in? I don't know.
That's a great question. That is a great question. Yeah, okay. Anybody got any answer to that? Please put them into the chat box, because I would love to know, because it's been on my stock watch list for ages. Mm. Okay, we had another question pre-one from Tet. He's basically asking about Get Busy, which is another software company, and the reason of his basis of his software is the shares have just rocketed as the one of the non-exec founders, a guy called Clive Raby, has increased his stake to 23%, and his son, who's the CEO, has increased his stake to just below 7%. So together they've increased their position to just below the takeover buy. Now, what does that mean when you look at it, Paul? Because the shares have gone to the moon, and over the last month or so.
Yeah, I heard one of the readers flagged up that it looked like the directors could be getting ready to bid for it. So, but to be honest, Paul, I haven't actually looked into it in that much more detail recently. In the past, we've always thought it's okay. It's got the cash generative data vault division, hasn't it, which funds one or two startup divisions which never really gain much traction. But certainly when you see activity like that in terms of what the directors are doing, it looks interesting, doesn't it? So have you done any more work on this one?
Yeah, I remember we discussed it about sort of 4-5 months ago, and I was a bit worried about how much it would be AI'd, about agentic AI, basically being able to do sort of like simple stuff. But it's integrated now with some of the big leading tax systems, basically out in the States and stuff.
Oh, yes.
And so if that gives them more visibility with APIs and more buying, USPs, then that's great. Clearly, the directors are only buying for one thing. They believe there's a long-term story. They believe it's undervalued. Yeah. It's got all the hallmarks. If they've just gone underneath 30%, then my view is that, they're either going to put the thing out to sale, they're either going to basically solicit offers, or they're going to buy it themselves. So I can understand why the shares have moved up, because they have been buying at 80p plus.
Yeah, so no, I agree with all that. As a trade, it looks very good. But looking at the company's standalone numbers, it's pretty unimpressive, to be honest with you. Modest growth, only just profitable. So, something certainly seems to be happening, doesn't it?
Yeah, we've got a great comment from Laconic. He says, basically, OneSpatial pay a lot for ordnance survey data.
So
that's brilliant. Thanks, Laconic. That is a top draw. Really good. Okay, we've got Rebecca. She's asking about Hollywood Bowl. What was your view on the bowling alley boys?
Yeah, very relieved. I have to disclose I do hold this personally. We had I think a lot of people were holding back on this because of the exceptionally hot spring summer weather in the UK, which you would naturally assume that bowling alleys wouldn't be particularly popular during that heat wave. But actually, it put out a pretty good inline update, or even slightly ahead this week, I think. So I was very pleased with that. Yeah, it went up. I think it was on Monday. That's why I had quite a good day on Monday with that rising. I think it's still very cheap. I just think it's the market's fundamentally pricing it wrong. I think it's worth 20-25% more than the current price. Very nice cash generative business model, pays lovely generous divvies, it's self-funding its own refurbs, and a steady, not particularly rapid growth of new sites as well. Just a lovely business. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, it's got a good balance sheet actually as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, decent balance sheet with net cash. It just ticks all my boxes as an overlooked, undervalued. I think it'll get bid for because we've had Essendon, which was a smaller competitor. Yes. I think the Harwood boys took that private. And then have they refloated it yet? Or did they sell it on to private equity? I can't remember. But these things, you know, tick a lot of the boxes for private equity because they're so cash generative. So I think it's very good, very cheap.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Okay, let's move sectors. Let's go to retail or effectively for health home furnished. We've got Casper Mann. He's asking about Sanderson Designs, which I think did they come out with some numbers today or trading update?
They did. Yeah, they did. It was interim results, I think, to July. I looked at these first thing and I thought, oh, I think the share's going up. So I flagged up at 10 to 8 to my readers that in my sort of super quick summary, we flagged, what was the other one we were talking about? The software thing, ActiveOps, we flagged that up as looking good. And we flagged Sanderson. So I'm pleased we hitting the nail on the head with those two. So with Sanderson, I think it was in line today. Profits were, H1 profitability was flat versus last year. So nothing particularly exciting there. But the outlook comments, you know, make it sound as if there's sort of green shoots of recovery. And it's still profitable. And it's got a particularly good, amazing, actually, balance sheet. So the whole thing's copper bottomed, trading way below net tangible asset value. And it's got net cash of 20% of its market cap. And I'm sure the inventories could be reduced to and turned into cash as well. So licensing revenues are doing well. We think it's actually probably turned the corner now. So yeah, we like that. We think it's probably justified in today's, 12, 13% share price rise, I think.
Yeah. What's the growth on it? As in, like, is it going to be able to? I mean, it's a really competitive area, that whole home furnishings, you know, type of stuff, isn't it?
Well, it's more bespoke designs of fabric and wallpaper, and it manufactures in-house. But actually, the engine, really, of the profitability is the licensing side. So it owns all the William Morris designs, for example, and has this huge catalogue. Although, interestingly enough, one of my readers made a very good point, saying that the licensing revenue is all very well. It's about several million of pure profit each year. But when people see the designs on a tea towel or on a mug or something or on a bedspread from one of your licensees, does that devalue the brand? And that actually is something I'd not thought of before. I think that's a really good question to ask. So maybe licensing revenues, bit of a double-edged thing. I don't know.
Yeah, if you get them onto all kinds of sort of, tea towels and mugs and stuff like that, then you get, I agree.
But you would hope that Sanderson would have, you know, blocks in place to not allow the product to be used on trashy items. But no, I think it's maybe turned a corner today. So for that reason, I think Sanderson actually worth a look. But it's a value share. It's not really a growth company.
Yeah. Okay. In the same sector, but in apparel, we've got Superstar. Never a good name. I hope he is. Anyway, he's asking about Sosandar, which is the women's retailer. Did they come out with the results as well just recently?
Yeah, that's how. We had an update. I think it was an H1 update, which is the quieter half of the year. Yeah. It's not really going anywhere, to be honest. I mean, it was a small loss of about $1 million in H1, but they said they'll be in line for the full year, which is probably going to be kind of round about break even. But it's an incredibly difficult sector, and I'm full of admiration for what the joint CEOs there have done, you know, tackling such a difficult sector. But and it's got a notably strong balance sheet with a load of net cash, about half the market cap, I think. So it's copper bottomed. But what are they going to do with the cash? You know, are they going to just keep opening more shops, which are expensive? Yeah. They've opened 3 or 4 shops, not really generating a return from them. So sadly, I don't think it's really going anywhere. But it's cheap for a reason.
It needs a catalyst, doesn't it? I mean, it basically, it's making no money at all. It's 0.5% EBIT margins, profitability. It's got cash, but unless it can get like for like growth and expand and get a sort of like, I don't know, cachet associated with its Sosandar brand, then unfortunately it's going to be like this forever, I think. We need to catch
it. And you're absolutely right. And they did have a setback from the M&S cyber hack because they a fair bit through. I suppose that maybe the eventual exit route could be a bid from Next or M&S, but they're not going to pay much for it, are they?
No, they're not. Okay, let's move sectors. Let's go to specialist car engineer. We got Lemon Physically is asking about AB Dynamics, which I've not looked at for some time. They basically do testing. Crash dummy testing for cars and new model testing and safety, and they have tracks and all around the country. Really high performance business, but I'm guessing. I don't know what the shares are. I'll put the chart up in a moment, but I'm guessing they may be hit by the slowdown in the automotive sector, even though, you know, there has been electric vehicles, which are all now, you know, new models and stuff. What was your take on AB Dynamics? Have you had a look at it recently?
ABDP, I think, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
When it's all letters that all sound the same, it's difficult, isn't it? The last update we've got from that was on 23rd of September, so a little while ago. That was a trading update.
Wow.
Adjusted operating profit slightly ahead of expectations. That sounds all right, doesn't it? No clear outlook guidance we've got. It's got a good balance sheet, plenty of net cash. Looks okay. We think it's a quality company, but it's not cheap even after recent falls. Have you got the chart there on? Yeah, the chart.
Yeah, there's the chart, yeah.
I'll just have a look on ShareScope as well. What is it? Have you got a view on this one, Paul, while I look it up?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the same. I've always viewed it into that really high quality type business. It has been sold off because of weakness in the automotive, but it's still, I mean, it depends on whether you consider it trough earnings and whether it's going to take another growth spurt, but it's still on 18, 19 times this year.
Yeah, that's the figure I've got. Yeah, yeah. You're only getting a negligible dividend yield.
Yeah.
And you know, these Chinese EV makers are just going to flatten everything else, aren't they, by most accounts. So I think the Chinese probably buy equipment and services from ABDP as well. But what we've seen in the past, where the Chinese move into a sector, they just, you know, after a couple of years, they're doing everything themselves, aren't they? So I don't think it would appeal to me personally, this one.
Yeah. I mean, its operating margins are 11, 12%. At the moment, and you might be able to get that to 15. You should be able to get that to about 15. So, yeah, I mean, it might well be, it might just be, you know, it all depends on how much USP they have and how many other competitors.
In terms of,
because regulation's not going away. There's no doubt about it, particularly in sort of EVs and cars and stuff for safety reasons.
Yeah.
But if you've got new operators and different ways of testing the safety of new products, new devices in cars, then they may have in some competition. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good sort of spot, actually, Lemon Physical. The shares have come down. It's certainly worth having a good look at that to see whether we, you know, they've got optically just a bit too cheap.
It would be if it's the growth drivers or whether it's just going to fizzle out and be redundant. And I mean, long term, the history of it, I remember when this thing floated. I mean, it was a major multi-bagger, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then it reached a peak in 2019, just before the pandemic, and kind of looks like it's had its day from the chart, I would say. So, yeah, no strong view for me either way, really, but it doesn't particularly appeal to me.
Yeah, I could see actually one catalyst for private equity putting a number on these because they might have been looking at it for some time and they think, right, okay, this is the time to go on it. So that would be the one thing I would say. Yeah. Okay, good. In a similar vein, actually, we've got Thomas. He's asking about Oxford Instruments, which is a high-value scientific instrumentation business. It's got two divisions. It's got the imaging side, which goes into labs and R&D outfits, particularly into healthcare. That's been suffering because of the tariffs. And then it's also got this advanced technologies, scientific instrumentation, which actually is doing really, really well because it's sort of testing and measuring compound semiconductors, which have been used a lot in data centers and power circuits that drive AI. So it's got two. One's doing well, one's doing badly. But the one it's doing badly is swamping the one which is doing well. So they came out with a sort of like a difficult trading update. But what was your take on Oxford Instruments? The shares have dropped a bit, about 10%.
Yeah, they have. We previously, looking back at my previous notes in April and twice in June, we were positive on it, seeing it as good value and quality, high quality company at a reasonable price. But I remember it's updated in the last few days and it was a bit wobbly. I think it was a profit warning, but we couldn't get hold of any broker notes to quantify it. So unfortunately, for that reason, we just decided to suspend our sort of color coding on it until we got more information. So this one, unfortunately, due to lack of information, just has to be in my don't know tray, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I mean, I would it was a profit warning. Personally, yeah. I would say this is a temporary dip, because in that imaging business, it was Q1 which was the slowdown, because essentially you had a lot of research bodies in the States, not surprisingly, getting nailed by Trump because he just reduced all the funding. And then you started, that was about 10%, 11% down, and then went about 6% down in Q2 and is now back to where it is like for like. So they're expecting second half growth. It's not cheap, but it is an absolute industry leader on this one. And I was just looking at I haven't got the numbers on it, but I also have. It's basically trading at about 17.5 times PE and around about 11 times EBITDA. So at the moment, I think one part of the business is fab. That compound semiconductor scientific is just absolutely rocketing because of the data centers being built. And then the one side, you've got to wait until that comes back, which is really sort of the medical side, and the just imaging side is being hit largely by tariffs and it's NIH downturn, budgetary constraints in the States.
Yeah, I mean, I found my notes on it now. This was from Monday. Dropped about 8% on the day on this H1 trading update, which is like a mild profit warning, isn't it? But we did, we do notice here Q2 improved after Q1 tariff disruption. So that's kind of sounds like a temporary fixable problem. Yeah. So we're more comfortable with that than something structural going wrong. Although it was previously forecast for operating profit to go up 50%. Which they've come down a lot from that, I think. Now, a standout feature of it, actually, unusually good balance sheet as well, actually, with net cash of 84 million. So that is a positive. So I think when we've got a bit more information on it, we'll probably go back to a moderately positive view on that one then. Yeah,
no, I like it. We've got another comment. We've got some Stephen Burke. He's on One Spatial. He's saying, basically, the gross margins on the software side are 80 to 90%, but on the services side, it's 35. And so it must be that turnover is split half and half. And
blended,
And they've got that ordnance survey data they're buying as well. So that explains.
Oh, that's great. This is brilliant. It's like having our own team of researchers answering our questions. It's great.
Okay. Right. We've got Vincent. He's asking about Gamma Communications. We also actually had a separate guy, Vince, who asked about it as well. So what are your views on?
Oh, it's got to be the same person, isn't it?
It is probably, yeah. But they basically Gamma Communications do sort of like contact center services to small, medium-sized companies, but also to big operators, both in the private and the public sector around Europe. I think they've got a big business in the UK and a big one in Germany. They've been struggling in the UK and they've just moved from AIM onto the main market. Shares now were considered really highly valued, but have really come down. Don't know what your latest views on it at all.
Yeah, sorry, my internet just dropped out briefly. We like it, Gamma Communications. Yeah, we're amber green on this one. I can't really remember much about it personally, but 90% recurring revenue, apparently. 2% yield and buybacks. We think, we're broadly positive on it, actually. Looking at, we've covered it four times this year, and each time we've been amber green, which is our code for positive. Yeah, looks quite interesting.
Yeah, it's about 10.5 times PE I've got going forward. The one thing I would say, Vince, is basically that how is this business going to be impacted by AI? Because it's services into contact centers. If it embraces AI and becomes a leader with it, then it will definitely improve its differentiation against other competitors in being able to do, you know, agentic customer service through those contact centers and help clients take cost off. Equally, if somebody else introduced it, you could see the value of this whole contact center industry decreasing in size, and they get a, you know, they got the same market share in a smaller pie. And I think that's where the market is viewing it, because if you go onto contact centers now, it's rarely you actually speak to anybody. You basically got a chat bot or chat box. You put your questions in, and likewise, you know, you can, because of your voice recognition, you can almost just talk straight into it and it'll come out with a response. And that's the way it's going. So I actually think this could be, and I wouldn't discourage anybody because it is cheap, but I would say this is cheap for a reason. I think this looks like a value trap to me, given where technology is moving, but I could be wrong.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I don't feel I have any industry knowledge on this, so I wouldn't know what the future holds at all. But I mean, the forward PE of 10.6 does look with a reasonable balance sheet as well. But like you say, that could be for a reason, because people are seeing this as a declining business. So I don't know, for me personally, but we like the value metrics on it.
Okay, good. Right, we've got a bit of a treat for everybody. Me and Paul managed to quiz and get hold of the management team of another software company, Tribal, which does sort of like SaaS software for universities, last Friday. So I'll give you a bit of feedback what we came up with. They've got two divisions. The main one is this student information services that they supply into 65% of the UK's higher education bodies, which runs all of their bookings for rooms and for lectures, and manages the students, both recruitment all the way through to when they become, you know, basically after they leave university, and managing. And then they've got this services business. Anyway, what was your take on the business? The shares have, after a good trading update about, 3 months ago, have gone up 50% actually.
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting. I mean, the management ticked my subjective box, which is that I trust these people and I think they seem to know what they're doing. You know, that's kind of very subjective. But so I felt comfortable with the management. Very direct, straight answers as well. That's the other key thing. Do they give politicians answers or fudge answers? No, we got straight answers from these guys, and that's what I look for. So I think it's quite interesting. You'll probably explain why you think there's 2x upside on the price, which I get your logic for that, but I'll leave that to you. I think my main reservation on it is limited expansion prospects. I think they don't want to go into new geographies, and the geographies they're in, they're already a major player, and they can do a bit of upselling, but I just don't think it can kind of scale up to the sort of extent that I would personally want. But it does look cheap. So, right, over to you, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, that you raise a really, really good point there. I mean, the balance sheet now is absolutely fine. They had this problem with Singapore University. They've paid all of the compensation, and now it's got small amount of debt. And we spoke to the CFO, and she said, actually, it's going to be generating cash going forward. So the balance sheet is absolutely fine. Yeah. The growth side is absolutely the point. And the reason why it has limited number of new customers it can take on board is because it's so sticky and so difficult to get in and so painful for other people, you know, to swap a particular incumbent provider, that actually that's really done in extremist situations. So the growth opportunity, as you rightly point out, is upselling new software or new modules. And so out of the two divisions, they're currently on a market cap of 130 million. And their SaaS software business does an ARR of 65. Now, the CEO, Mark, he's got a target to get that from 64 million to 80 million at the end of 2026 or 2027. On a 3x multiple at 80 million, you get 240. Now, the other division, over the fullness of time, once it's been right-sized and, you know, get growth, this assessment, IT assessment type of business, will probably go for around about, will be sold over the next 18 months, 2 years, for about 15 million. So you add 240 to 15, you get near 250, 260, compared to the market cap of 130 currently. You can see 2x upside. Now, I actually think we'll see an event before then. I've got a sneaky suspicion, because they got a bid at 74p about 2 years ago. I think shareholders, having accepted it at 72p, as long as the blocking shareholder, Genzibar, wants to sell, and now there is a catalyst for him to sell, because apparently his divorce settlement has happened, and he probably needs some money to buy, because he's a rival in the US. He does similar sort of software, Genzibar. he might want to buy Anthrology, which went bust into the States. And if he needs some money, then he needs to sell his shares in Tribal, liquidate that, and then put it into his, into that particular business. So there may well be a catalyst. And if he's giving it the green light to sell, then there's a buyer out there. And I think the other major shareholders, the Gresham House and the Harlems, would accept it, probably accept, well, you know, if they a bird in the hand and, you know, worth two in the bush sort of stuff at an earlier, you know, offer. But it'll be north of 75p, but it just depends on how it would be between 75 and 120. I don't know. But I think this one will have some strategic news probably over the next 18 months, 2 years. So I've just disclosed, I own the shares, so I believe the story, but everybody has to make their own views. It has been, as you all correctly point out previously, it has been error prone in the past.
Yeah, it has. It's been accident prone in the past, and you can't just completely ignore that. But I have to say, looking at the value, forward PE of 13.9 for a very, very established recurring revenues business that's the leader in its field is quite cheap, isn't it? Even though you wouldn't put it on a huge PE because it hasn't got the exponential upside growth. But yeah, I think it is. It does look cheap. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, we've got Mark. He's asking more generally about the oil price. It's been going down and what that means for the oil services sector, things like Hunting, Plexus and people like that in terms of the oil and gas ecosystem. Because now that you've got the Middle East situation seemingly under control with the Gaza ceasefire, then with Saudi pumping or the OPEC pumping, plus you've got new supply coming in from Guyana, which is enormous field, The oil price is now $60, and you see it also in the North Sea. Like you've got basically Serica Energy. What's your views on the oil field patch, basically? Particularly, say, let's go Hunting because it's obviously right in there.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing to add on the sector at all. I mean, it has done pretty well since February. The shares. Hunting fell to a low of about £2.50 and now they're about £3.25. It's lost a bit in the last few weeks. So it's been all right, Hunting. I'm still holding that one. I don't really, and Plexus, it's not really relevant to it's too small and specialised. So I don't really have anything to add, Paul. I don't have any sector knowledge at all, really.
Yeah. I would just say, I mean, unfortunately, what happened, you have all boats fall and all boats rise with a commodity price. You've seen it with gold going up. All the gold miners have gone to the moon, Fresno and people like that. And when the oil price is very high, everything in that ecosystem does well, particularly the oil field service. It's a beta play. Particularly if you've got things like you've got your commodity exposure, which is beta, and then you've got a sort of high value discretionary type of product. I don't think that's so much with Hunting, but I think it's more to do with things like Gulf Marine Services with their big sort of rigs, with day rates going down. So it wouldn't be a sector that I would swim in at the moment, because I think the oil price, unless we get a geopolitical event, given what we've had, we're still with Russia, the oil price at $60, it looks like a value trap to me, to be perfectly honest, but hey, I could be wrong.
Funnily enough, I was wondering what it was that was pulling my portfolio down, and looking at Gulf Marine Services, I'm thinking, I think it's been that. Yeah, that's down to 15p. I mean, the only thing with that is, again, it's a special situation, and they've paid off most of the debt now over the last few years. So every month that goes by, its balance sheet improves. So, yeah, I'm just sticking with it. I don't really particularly think that much about the macro for these sort of special type situations, but maybe I should, but it's not my area, so
I do for commodity orientated ones, absolutely. Okay. I think it's it just drives the top line, it drives your margins day one. How much you can sell it for, it's like pricing, isn't it? But I do. Okay, good. We got Peter, who's asking about very popular share YouGov, which is basically that polling business, but also I think it's now moving into trying to become the sort of the leader in all things insight in the internet. So when you get the citations on ChatGPT or in Gemini, then they come up with their opinion that their consumer panels give those views about products and markets and all that kind of stuff. But the shares took a bit of a bashing this week after their results.
Yeah, we weren't impressed with these results. I mean, we have to give a view pre-8am, and I just said, I don't think there's enough here. What the PE is optically very cheap, but you've got two big problems. One is a terrible balance sheet with far too much gearing. It's an awful balance sheet, which does matter because it increases risk and it drains the company of cash flow. But also, the outlook comments, I thought, were lackluster. It basically said, we're going to have to invest heavily in the current year, and we're only going to get... what did they say? Something like low single digit, you know, or very modest revenue and operating profit growth. Well, when a company tells you that, you're just going to move on, aren't you, and look at other things. So, yeah, I can't get excited about YouGov, I'm afraid.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I think if they get the model right and do become sort of like one of the main sort of reliable or trusted partners for the internet, for consumer voices, then yes, it would really work. But equally, I would look at it and I would say that I think it's 14 million consumers they have in that panel. And I think that's very vulnerable because 14 million sounds a lot. But when you compare it to 7 billion, which is what the big AI boys have, you know, in terms of their reach with Google and ChatGPT, aggregating those insights, you're never going to compete with 14 million. But I think they've got. I think the shares have sold off because of that strategic inflection.
You could be right.
Market's not comfortable about its business model going forward.
Yeah, I think that's a very sensible view of it. I mean, I would say the figures are actually quite good. I think this was full year results for July year end, I think, and the numbers were actually quite good. So the business had been, you know, really struggling. So it's more than stabilized and profits did go up. So the numbers I thought were okay. It's just when I got to the outlook bit, I thought, that's all a bit
woolly.
It just doesn't sound interesting, does it?
We want
growth companies, really, not things that say, oh, we're going to probably deliver about the same profit this year as last year. And, you know.
No, I would agree. We've got a question from David Dorsey. He's asking about... what's it called? RFX, which is
Ramsden's.
But I would say yes, Ramsden's. But I would say David, have a look at last week's show. We covered it in a lot of detail.
So
let's not repeat it. We've then got Harish Harani. He's asking about Synetics, which is a CCTV company that does special sort of surveillance stuff for casinos and for offshore oil and gas facilities. And I think the jewel in its crown, the growth, is now going to do CCTV control systems for critical infrastructure, which is now increasing in size, like data centers. But what's your take on Synetics? I've not looked at it for some time.
I've not looked at it for a while. No, I don't think it's had any results out for a while. I know it's a quite a nice company. It's had a series of good trading updates in the last year or two, I think. Yeah, here we are. We're amber green on it. We've covered it six times this year, actually, quite extensively. Strong balance sheet, particularly good balance sheet with a strong net cash position, which you get with a lot of small caps, hidden value there. I don't think it's a particularly good company. It's all right, you know, and it's reasonably priced. Can't really see a catalyst, to use that word again, really, for it to, I don't think it should re-rate, for example, and I think it's one of those contract win type companies that you just never know when there'll be a gap in the order book. So it's fine, it's all right, but I don't think I'd particularly want to own the shares.
And also I would say have a look at technology to see how it can be potentially impacted, because you've got so many now sort of like, you know, camera CCTV type, you know, instrumentation that actually, if you just overlay a really good AI system, you know, you could just use it from Google or Gemini or whatever it is, then you can do a lot of sort of watching and monitoring, which will only flag alerts to you rather than actually having to do a third party engagement. So again, I think it's a bit like Gamma. If they've got, AI is going to change these sectors massively going forward. If they embrace it, they will be a real winner and do really well. However, because of the cheapness of AI, i.e. it's free as you go for, you develop it and it becomes free because it's just a piece of code, then I would say, you know, you've got to really be the leader of this whole area. Otherwise, you know, you're basically, you're going to get commoditized out. But I just think, Not many markets are nowadays stable in technology with AI.
True.
And a lot of them can be vulnerable. So that'd be my
I mean, these guys, Cynetics, they do have a sector specialism, I think, in the oil and gas sector and also casinos. So they do have, you know, they've got a track record of being able to point to reference clients and say, look, we did a 1,000 camera thing or whatever for this or that casino. So that probably has some value. I mean, look, I don't want to sound negative on it. It's a good business and it's soundly financed and reasonably priced, I think, overall. Yeah. So, yeah.
Good. We've got Emma. She's asking about Gear for Music. It was a musical instrument online business that actually came out with some pretty good results, I think, this week, or better than expected. The shares have responded well.
Yeah, this has been lovely for holders. We were a bit late on the uptake for this, but it's a margin improvement story, basically. They've benefited from a number of competitors going under, and you've then had that lovely operational gearing. I think it's had two or three upgrades this year. So every time the shares look a bit stretched on valuation terms, you get another upgrade, which is lovely to see. So very, very well done to holders of this. We need more things like this to get people more interested in small caps, I think. So yeah, we did review it this week. We have one of our writers is a keen musician himself, and he knows it well. And we think it's good. Don't know how much further they can push the margins. That's the only, it is still a low margin business. You do have to bear that in mind. But yeah, we think it's pretty good overall. And they've sorted out their balance sheet and it's owner managed, which are big positives as well. So yeah, well done to people on this. You've done well.
Do you know who's gone out of business in terms of their rivals?
No, they've still got Thomann, this German operation, who I think are the dominant player in the sector. But no, I'm not sure who's gone bust. But it's one of those things, though. You only need an extra 1 or 2 percentage points on your gross margin. And suddenly the numbers stack up, don't they? We've actually, funnily enough, seen that with Anglinger Direct as well.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if it's a sector thing that maybe the early e-commerce businesses are now seeing competition drop out and they're starting to become proper, sensible, profitable businesses, maybe.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Okay, good. We've got Nick. He's asking about Morgan Advanced Materials, which came out with it was either a profit warning or some sort of negative trading update yesterday. It basically does sort of specialist parts and stuff which go into things like semiconductors and filters and stuff like this. Don't know your take on it at all. I think they did actually, they're also selling, aren't they, their old sort of steel making filter business, ceramics business to Vesuvius, I think, has been talked about. That was before they've announced that. But anyway, in the round, what's your view?
We like this, actually. We don't understand it. MGAM is the ticker, but we like the numbers. Forward PE is 9.5, 5.8% dividend yield. It was a slightly soft update this week, wasn't it? I can't remember the details, but I think they just said, some areas are a bit tough. Mild profit warning. And looking at the chart, it looks like they've warned on profit twice this year, in February and in August, but not disastrously in either case. So I don't know, if people understand the sector, it might be worth them having a look at it, actually, because the numbers on the face of it look quite appealing for value type investors, I would say. Yeah, here we are. We were amber green on it in May and in August, mainly for those dividends. It's got a bit of debt, though. 1.7 times is a little bit on the high side. But I don't really know much about it, Paul. I was to say, I'm only looking at the numbers.
Yeah. No, I like it as well. I think that, if I remember rightly, that the business they're selling, they're going to get about 60 million in for it, or 70 million. So that debt will come down. But you're right. I mean, with, you know, EBIT margins of 10%, trading at 11 times PE, which is not expensive, 5% dividend yield, and 0.8 of sales. So I would say there's definitely at least 20% upside on that.
Yeah, I suppose that the question would be looking into what's the competition, you know, are they suffering price erosion? It would be that next level of detail, which obviously I cover nearly 800 companies, I can't possibly do that. So here we are. Markets remain weak, it said, and some orders pushed into 2026. That was the update yesterday. So
Okay, good. Let's move to Oxford Metrics. We've got Deborah. She's asking about it. I think it does sort of like specialist cameras for things like ABBA Voyage, I think they did the for the entertainment industry and for smart factories to be able to precisely locate how things move in different type of environments and bring those to life. I don't know what your views are. They've got shed load of cash, I believe.
Yeah, nearly three quarters of the market cap is net cash. They'd be a very good deal makers, management have in the past, buying and selling businesses at good prices. So I said to Dave, who analysed this, one of my team today, I said, we've got to push this up to from neutral to moderately positive. So he agreed. So, yeah, the main issue was whether the existing cameras business is now kind of old hat. And I think we've mentioned this on nearly every stock we talked about today.
Yeah.
Would it all just be replaced by AI? But anyway, the results today, I think, reassured on that front. That actually, it's still a decent cash generative business and it's got a big cash pile. Management have a track record of doing good deals. So I think the bounce today was justified actually on this one. So
yeah.
But you'd be taking a bit of a punt because you don't know what they're going to spend the cash on. That's the thing. Although they have done quite a few buybacks and I think generous divvies as well. So some of that cash is finding its way back to shareholders. But hopefully management will just do a blockbuster deal. And so it's one of those things where it's a bit of a punt. But I think it's quite interesting, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the market in smart factories is enormous. And if they can get that sort of like, you know, get a real pinch point where their sort of like point solution, their technology can be incorporated into how it's automated and improve the efficiency of, you know, of smart factories, then they could do really well. But you're right, I would need to understand exactly what their USP is in that technology stack to really sort of like be able to, you know, you nail your flag to the mast to see whether it's that's going to be a growth area. But they've clearly got something because, you know, the output they did at ABBA Voyage is absolutely terrific. So I've watched the show. It's great.
Oh, did they? I didn't realise they'd done
They did. Yeah, they did at the ABBA Voyage, yeah.
And they've got this markerless system that's coming in. I tell you what, Paul, this would be a good one for you and I to approach them and see if they'll have a chat with us.
Good idea.
One day.
Good idea. Okay, good. We got Richard Leppington is asking about Morgan Sindall, which I think is an electrical contractor. It's gone boom time recently with its office fit out because 2 years ago, its biggest competitor, ISG, went bust, and it's just become a basically it's become a money printing division, this one, because it can charge what it wants, and everybody's who was let down by ISG has moved to Morgan Sindall. But what's your take?
Oh, and this is incredible. I mean, looking at the chart for the sector, I would have just dismissed it and not got involved. But look at the chart. I mean, it's the long term chart's fantastic on it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we like it. We think the numbers don't lie, and I think it keeps putting out. Yeah, we've been positive on it four times this year. Morgan Sindall, 12.2 billion order book. Wow.
Yeah.
Significantly ahead. Update on the 2nd of October. Significantly ahead on the 17th of June. It's fantastic, isn't it? Whatever they're slightly ahead on the 25th of March. Whatever they're doing, it's working brilliantly, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I mean, I would personally, if I own the shares, I would take profits on it because it's probably as good as it's ever going to get, where you've got an almost near monopoly for office fit outs. I mean, gee, man, you know, there are barriers to entry into office fit outs. They're not massive. So you will get other people going into it, or if they're not already trying to do it. So I personally, if I had the choice, I would be taking money. It's on about, it looks at them here, actually. The EPS is going down next year in 2026. So it's on a forward PE of about 16, which for a contractor is not cheap.
No, but it'll probably beat, won't it? Because it has a track record of... I think you're right. I think on that valuation, and given to the size it's got to as well, you know, 2.3 billion market cap, 12 billion order book, getting kind of really strong growth on that huge starting point is going to be more and more difficult. So I think top slicing or banking profits is a good call on that one. Yeah
Good. Okay, let's move to going to IT. We got Byte Tech or Technologies came out with results. This is like a value-added reseller of software in the UK to the public and the private sector. Came out with an in-line result, but the market didn't like it. Shares were down 10%.
I'm probably not the best person to ask, but we're not madly keen on this. It doesn't we can't see anything particularly interesting there. You've got a 4% yield, so I suppose that's not too bad. But yeah, doesn't. Did I imagine it, or if they had a bid approach at some point? I might have imagined that.
Yeah, I think you have. Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. No, I can't get excited about this one. Do you know it, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I it's not cheap actually. I did look at it. What was it on? It's on around about. Yeah, I'm still getting it around about 16.5 times PE. Got a good balance sheet. It's one of the main operators and one of the main sort of like trusted partners for businesses and the public sector to put in software to test it and to customize it. So it deserves a premium rating. I'd say it's probably about priced right and
price about right, yeah.
You know, and consultants going forward, you've got to really ask, you know, where are they going to be in that value stack? Because when things move to the cloud, how much tailorization do you need and how much is it going to take time? And
I don't really know.
It wouldn't be the first thing I'd run into. I prefer software companies rather than software value-added resellers.
Yeah, and we had a profit warning. That all makes sense to me completely. We had a profit warning from it on the 2nd of July. We've been amber on this 4 times we've covered it this year, and each time we can't, you know, we just don't know, neutral. So, doesn't interest me really, that one.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's go to the gambling sector. We've got Gaming Realms. We've got Brian is asking about it. Any views on it? Does Slingo, doesn't it?
Slingo, that's right.
I think it got hit in April with the betting reduction in betting sizes in the UK. And then as obviously there's a bit of a sector hangover at the moment in terms of people worrying that the Chancellor's going to put a big hatchet into online gambling. But anyway, putting all that together, what's your sort of your view?
We really like this. I mean, we've been green on it now 5 times this year. I don't understand why the market gives it such a puny valuation, such a low rating on a stock that's delivered fantastic compound growth, recurring revenues as well. It's a growth company on a value share rating. So I don't really understand why it did have, as you say, it had a bit of a setback. That was on the 8th of September from a headwind from a change in the rules on the UK. But it said it would, within a year, I think it said it would have got back to where it was. So, and of course, it's international. So it's not particularly, you know, it's not totally dependent on the UK market. It seems to be expanding into very well in the Americas as well. So we think it looks really good. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. No, I mean, I think the overseas is definitely, it just depends on how much is it a one product, one brand type company? And what rating does that ever get in terms of potential acquisitions? But it hasn't put a foot wrong. I give it that. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. And it's everything management said a few years ago that they've done. And it's building up a net cash pile. The cash flow statement is the thing to look at, though. It's not as good as the P&L because I think they capitalize a lot of development spending and so on. So with Gaming Realms, do make sure you check out the cash flow statement as well as the other numbers. But no, I mean, it just seems to be churning out good results and growth every time it reports. So, yeah.
Okay, we've got Questor Aware. He's asking, any significance can be attached to Blackstone's? Is it a bid for Big Yellow, one of the big self-storage REITs?
Oh, yes. That was interesting. They said they basically put a warning shot across the Chancellor's.
Did they?
It said we're not going to go ahead and bid, and you know, we're concerned about what might be in the budget. And that was obviously referring to the business rates, which they're talking about hiking them on very large distribution centres, I believe. But I don't think the Chancellor should take any notice of that, because who cares if Blackstone buy it or not? It doesn't matter who owns it to anyone else, does it?
Yeah, so, no, you're right.
But SafeStore actually is my pick in that sector. I love REITs. I think it's a fantastic area at the moment of just value on a plate for a lot of them. And SafeStore rose 10% on news, and it still looks cheap. So, but obviously these guys could be hit by, the occupier pays the business rates, don't they? But it would affect the capital value indirectly, I think, because when you look to lease a large property, you know, you combine the rent and rates, don't you? And you look at the overall number. So that could be a headwind, couldn't it?
No, good idea. Good spot. Okay, we got Dan JW's asking about Goodwin. I know we talked about it last week, but he says, after a phenomenal year, is there more upside or should you be banking some profit?
If I knew that, I'd be a billionaire. So yeah. I don't know, Paul. Yeah. What price is it now? Has it come off a bit? Yeah. I mean, look, fabulous business, no doubt about it. But everything's got a price, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And when you see a chart looking like that, I mean, you'd be crazy not to top slice a bit, really, wouldn't you? But that's up to each investor and their investing time frame. So, yeah.
No, I'm with you. If I was, it's got some very good, strong secular tailwinds, but it all comes down to whether it's as good as as good as it's ever going to be. It'll probably carry on because I think it's got a very good management team. It depends how big in your portfolio, and it's got a lot of premium in there already. I think is probably a fair comment.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. And the big problem, again, it's one of these kind of family companies that's a private company that happens to have a listing, and they don't put forecasts out there. So it's very, the communications are not very good. So it's difficult to value and ascertain. It's almost like a cult. I know lots of people who are big, very shrewd investors who have long-term positions in this, who've been in it years, who absolutely swear by it, and I had some, I think at £3.60, and I got bored of them and sold them, and of course they've four bagged since. So it's one of those ones where, funnily enough, just believing, a bit like Games Workshop years ago, believing in the story, ignoring the share price, has paid off magnificently. But everything eventually runs out of steam, doesn't it? So the question is, none of us know the answer to that, do we? So, well done to holders. It's lovely to see people doing so well.
Okay, good. We've got a final one. A stock that we don't talk about much is Vicky. She's asking about Software Circle, which I think is a buy and build software company that's come out with a couple of acquisitions in the financial services sector for brokers and stuff. Shares have done very well. I think the business model is essentially the same as Constellation Software, which is the sort of the poster child of buy and build vertical sort of dominant software firms. It's based in Canada, has been doing this for 30 years. Anyway, I think that's what their modus operandi is, to buy and build dominant niche software firms and then realize value. But I don't know if you had a look at it. The shares actually have done pretty well.
Yeah, they've come back quite a bit, haven't they? We have covered this recently. Here we are, Monday. We had a quick look at it. I can't remember anything. I'll just see what we've got in our... It's about 90 million market cap, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, we've just basically said there's no profits, no guidance, and no forecasts. So from our point of view, it's impossible to value.
It's definitely got, I mean, not forecast. No, it's pretty easy to forecast because it said it in its statement. It's doing 24 million of sales. So it's on about just over 4x EV sales.
I think he meant broker forecast. Sorry, I think.
Yeah. 5 million of EBITDA. So it's on about 21x EBITDA. So again, not cheap. And the debt to EBITDA multiple is about 2.5, something like that. So they're probably now need to consolidate and raise some more money to invest it. But I would say this is if he can get, he's obviously in the management team obviously know what they're doing in terms of the success of it. And I, if I was him, I would raise some money at this level where I can and carry on doing what you're doing, because 4.5x sales, EV sales, is not a bad multiple for a buy and build software company, and 20x EBITDA won't be a bad time to raise it as well. But I think if you look at the shares, if you owned it 2 years ago and it's 5p then, it's 4 bagged in 2 years. So
fabulous. It's completely outside of my scope, this one, Paul, so I can't really add anything to
No, good spot, Vicky. Good spot. Okay, good. Well, we've been going now for nearly 70 minutes. So thanks again, Paul. Hope you have a safe trip back tomorrow from Malta. And we look forward to seeing you in terra firma down there in Bournemouth, sort of like having a go at those seagulls, as you always do.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks, Paul. Very stimulating, as always. I've enjoyed that.
Yeah, and thanks everyone for your comments and questions. Brilliant ones on OneSpace. We've now solved that mystery of why OneSpatial's gross margin is only 50%. So we'll do that again. Same channel, same time, same place.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.